Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, what's going on? How we doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, I genuinely hate to interrupt that last segment. I was right there with you guys on that one.
Thank you.
It was absolutely insane what the ESPN announcer said. You can't do that. It was beyond ridiculous and stunning to hear that sort of thing on the air.
Thank you.
Get off your media high horse, Gentry.
Another media high horse writer. Bill freaking Shakespeare.
Gentry, we got a lot to get to with you here today on the show. Let's just start with the Vols and the Super Regional against Notre Dame. What did you make of their performance in the regional? What stuck out to you there? And what do you make of this matchup for Tennessee taking on Notre Dame?
Well, I think this weekend, if you say going in, okay, they're going to go 3-0, then everybody would have expected that. But the way those last two games played out, I mean, they were really fun to watch. There was a lot of drama. They were very tense games. And I think there was good and bad in that for Tennessee. The good being that the lineup really stepped up in both games. Those were both situations in which you could see the pressure getting to a team a little bit that's as favored as Tennessee is. You could see a team getting tight and pressing at the plate. They didn't do it. They were able to get it done hitting-wise, and I think there's a lot to be gained from that. I felt like they needed a test like that. The flip side to that is people aren't really talking a lot about the starting pitching, and the starting pitching was shakier than you would have expected. You know, this is still a pretty young team in a lot of ways. And you get a freshman pitcher like Drew Beam doesn't have his best start. Chase Dolander doesn't have his best start. You know, you're talking about a team that we're expecting them to go to Omaha and make a deep run, maybe win the thing. And if that's the case, the pitching is going to have to be better than it was this last weekend, the starting pitching.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think this weekend they're in good shape. You know, the super regional setup, I mean, they got so much depth, and they, obviously those middle relievers were so good. But I'm with you. I mean, Dolander, Beam, you know, we'll see. Maybe Burns now becomes a good weapon as a bullpen arm. You know, Tidwell was great, but he was against Alabama State. So I agree. I think that's still the big question. So, Gentry, I got to get your – you know, I got to get your thoughts on the airborne digit, you know, from Mr. Beck, which as I think more and more about it, it just makes me laugh. I mean, it's just amazing that he did that in the middle of a play. But what's your I think a lot of the reaction yesterday was what I expected, like total embrace from Vol Twitter and total condemnation from especially Vol haters. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is who they are, and I don't know that Jordan Beck has ever done that earlier this season, but if someone was to find footage that shows that he did, it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me if another player on the team had done that. This is a team that's been doing this all year, and this is just who they are. And I think it's one of the reasons they're as good as they are. They have a mentality that I think has benefited them, and I think it upsets the other guy. I think they're very good at that, and they have, you know, I've used the comparison to pro wrestling in a way. I mean, it's a show, and these guys can talk it, and they'll do these things, and it fits the mentality of their coach. It works for them, and this whole thing. I mean, when you say this is one of the best teams in college baseball history, which with Tennessee at this point has a chance to be that, they have put together that kind of season. I think one of the things that people don't understand about them who really haven't watched them play a whole lot is how much of it is this sort of mentality and this sort of approach. They're very much in your face. I covered a series earlier this season against Alabama that ended up being a pretty wild series. That was the one that Vitello got suspended for bumping the umpire. And, you know, but after Tennessee lost the Friday night game, which was, you know, that's a headline at the time because they aren't losing hardly at all. And then afterwards, you know, you got guys coming in talking about punching them in the throat the next day and things like that. That's how they talk. That's how this team, it's not anything like what you would normally see about baseball. And I think there are people that would look at that and really be disgusted by what they see. But there are other people that would look at that and say, you know what, these guys are making college baseball a heck of a lot more interesting than college baseball usually is. And I think there's a case to be made either way, but they're very much a, you're either going to love them or hate them. And, you know, with Tennessee, you know, I think Tennessee fans could look at that and say, well, these guys might be acting like jerks, but there are jerks. And, of course, they're gonna be on their side.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Gentry, now that Vanderbilt season has come to a close, how do you view the season that was for Tim Corbin and company, and how do you think it sets up from here for them to grow heading into next year?
Yeah, I thought Robbie did a good job coming on with you guys and kind of going over where they had fallen short this season, and it just wasn't what a season that you would expect from Vanderbilt baseball, and especially this year. I mean, I think this team was preseason number two,
yep,
in the country, and that's because on paper they were expected to be as good as most Vanderbilt team, you know, just kind of keep it rolling, and it just never really happened. They showed it. The frustrating thing about this team to me was that they showed it in flashes. There were instances where you really saw what this was supposed to look like, and that included this last weekend. For three games there in Oregon, they played phenomenally. It was probably the two best days of their whole season. So you go into that game yesterday and say, look, they can keep this rolling. They can win this game. And they almost did, but when you look at what happened yesterday, they were able to manufacture some runs. They kind of held it together enough in some areas. But you're talking about a team that had five hits yesterday. They scored six runs, but they only had five hits. They struck out 15 times. I think they were 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position. And this sort of thing has been happening all season. There just wasn't enough production throughout their lineup, and there wasn't enough pitching to cover the lack of production throughout their lineup. This was a team that was pretty good in a lot of areas and not great in any of them. And that's not what you expect from them.
You going to Titans assistant interviews this morning?
No, I'm headed to the office. I'll be out there later on, probably about when you are there, Joe.
Okay. I feel like we're at the point of OTAs where it's like, okay, can we get to mini camp now, or you know, training camp or something? But what's your biggest point of interest right now with this team, with the glimpse you'll get today?
Well, the glimpse I'll get today or the glimpse I'll get at minicamp? Because I think that at this point, yeah, I think it's a lot different.
When
we actually get everyone out there.
Yeah, yeah. What are you most interested in right now?
Well, I'll tell you what. I went out there last week and I watched Treylon Burks for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and barely took my eyes off him the whole time, and along with everyone else. I mean, we were charting every single drill. When a guy skips a rep in line and everyone notices it, yeah, it's time for minicamp. And that's kind of how it was with Treylon Burks last week. So I probably wouldn't want to do that again today. But that's kind of where we're at. Well, I think there are some aspects to this that really haven't been discussed as much because you know you do fixate on things, especially with a first round pick. But Austin Hooper's done really well, and I believe that to be an underrated aspect that's really going to help this team this year. I like what I've seen with him and Ryan Tannehill so far. And I feel like defensively, even though all the stars aren't out there right now, I think the defense should be awfully good. So I think those two aspects, if you're a Titans fan looking for reasons to be optimistic, they exist right now, even as we talk about a first-round pick skipping reps.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessee and our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Gentry, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you bet. Take care, guys.
Absolutely. Gentry Estes, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get to some of those coming up next. The Sounds returned home to First Horizon Park for a six-game series against the Norfolk Tides, the AAA affiliate of the Baltimore Orioles. You can catch all the action tonight on ESPN 94.9 at 7:05. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9, presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Gentry Estes for joining us in the last segment. OTAs beginning to wrap up for the Titans this week, and then minicamp right around the corner here for the Titans. Some teams opening up minicamp today and this week, And, Joe, one of those teams is the San Francisco 49ers. And it looks like Deebo Samuel is going to be showing up for the San Francisco 49ers and being a part of the minicamp. Now, obviously, it has been an interesting offseason for the Niners and for Deebo Samuel. He wants a new deal and has requested a trade out of San Francisco. And that happened, you know, a couple months ago at this point, where Deebo Samuel requested a trade out of San Francisco. And San Francisco, to this point, has not shown much interest in accommodating Samuel's request and trading him. And now looks like he's going to be showing up to mandatory minicamp. Now, I realize that it's not the same as it was 10, 15 years ago, where there's a lot of holdouts into training camp. Like, the rules have changed on that front. So it's more, you know, financially burdensome now to do those things than it was in the past. So I'm sure that that's a big part of what's going on. But the fact of the matter is, Deebo Samuel requested a trade, and he's showing up to minicamp, and indications I see are he's probably going to be a part of the Niners until their stance changes. And right now, both publicly and apparently privately, according to some reporting, there's been no interest in terms of Deebo Samuel being traded to this point. So my question for you is, do you think the Titans maybe bailed on the A.J. Brown negotiations too quickly? Without being in the room, there were some reports that maybe A.J. Brown wanted out and asked for a trade when the negotiations weren't where he thought they should be. Given how Deebo Samuel's situation is playing out, do you think the Titans bailed on A.J. Brown too quick? I just want to get you fired up again.
I mean, I think I blacked out that day. I had my own Jordan Beck blackout moment that day. Like, what are you doing?
No birds that day, though.
Well, I don't know. I may have been flipping off my computer. Yeah, so what you're saying is that a player can demand a trade and have unrealistic demands, and you can continue to employ them and work it out? No way. That can happen?
Seems to be.
You don't say. Now, look, every situation's different. But, yeah, I mean, my stance hasn't changed on A.J. Brown. It's over, so we'll just keep, you know, last week, some nice video of A.J. Brown on the practice field. A lot of comments from, like, Darius Slay, like, he's going to be, like, unbelievable. Oh, yeah. You know, we all know what A.J. Brown is. Like, it's no surprise. You know, we'll see if he stays healthy. We'll see if they're good, if his quarterback's good enough, all that stuff. But, yeah, this is an example of why you can hang in there and you can work something out. And the thing with A.J. Brown is, and this is part of why I was so adamant that they screwed this up, is that I think a pretty good feel for A.J. Brown's personality over, you know, his 3 years here. I mean, it's, you know, probably easier than that first year when it was pre-COVID. But I think he's exactly the kind of guy who shows up to work and actually feels compelled to not let his teammates down. And ultimately, no matter what hardball he and his agent are playing, make it work and, you know, spend his prime years here being a star player for the Titans. And that's what I think would have happened. And I think all this stuff would have been put behind me, would have gotten paid. You know, they would have found a deal. And A.J. Brown's not the guy who's going to bail on a team. I don't believe that. So, doesn't matter now. He's gone. But we're going to watch Deebo. And we said that at the time. You're going to watch the Deebo thing. Let's see what happens. You're going to watch A.J. in Philly. See what happens. And, of course, we're watching Treylon Burks here.
We are. And it is interesting to me, like, if A.J. Brown goes out this year and let's say it does work out and his connection with Jalen Hurts is good and he stays healthy and he has, I don't know what the numbers would be, but let's say he has 1,300 yards, 10, 11 touchdowns, and the Eagles are a playoff team. What's the reaction here going to be if you're the Titans and as you view John Robinson? Now, a lot of that is going to be, okay, well, tell me what Treylon Burks does. So I understand that, but say the Titans don't win the division and they go 9-8, and the Colts go 10-7. They win the AFC South. A lot of people looking around saying, would have been nice to have A.J. Brown here if that's the case. Like, to me, in terms of just the optics of it, a lot of it's going to be, okay, what does Treylon Burks eventually turn into? And that's not just a this year discussion, but down the road as well. But this year, like, if A.J. Brown goes out there and has a great year, it's not going to be a great look for John Robinson.
Yeah. Well, look, again, I think we all know what A.J. Brown is. So if he has a great year and he's available every week, yeah, that's because that's the one thing that you can say to me in the Titans' favor is look how many games he missed, look at the various injuries. How do you feel great about him, you know, being a weekly participant as he gets older?
Well, we talked about the injury concern before he was traded.
For sure. That's right. Like, that was the Titans' negotiating chip, and that was the concern. That was the reason for pause. So that's – but, yeah, if he's fine and he's past that and then he has a great year, well, I don't think anybody will be surprised if it's a great year. I mean, he should have a great year. Even with Jalen Hurts as quarterback, like, he's going to produce. And I don't know if they'll be good or not, but if you have that and then in tandem with, as you said, the Titans taking a step back, because you're right, Treylon Burks is a – I mean, that's going to be a multi-year evaluation – but this thing goes into the window thing. Well, I thought the window was now.
Yeah.
If the window's now, why are you taking a step back from someone you know is whatever word you want to apply to A.J. Brown? I would put star or close to it. He's a standout, true number one receiver in the NFL, which I understand history doesn't really matter here, but the history of the franchise is very hard to find that guy. And just – look, the reality of the NFL, even with so many receivers who come in now and are ready as rookies, there's still – how many busts are there? The Eagles had so many that they finally decided they would trade, you know, picks to go get one they know can play. It's hard to find guys you know can play, and we don't know if Treylon Burks can play yet.
We don't, and I don't know. I look at this A.J. Brown situation, and I could just see the Titans fans' reaction right now if he goes nuts. And I mean, look, that's a decision that you got to live with if you're John Robinson, because you've already made it at this point. So you can't go back in time and reverse what's happened here. But like, it is interesting. I know Jared and Caroline have talked about the A.J. Brown situation, and Jared has brought up, you know, he thinks the Titans did the right thing and that it's quote unquote kind of like the Patriot way that they used to be. Well, I mean, we'll see. I will say it is very Patriot-ish. What they did here, is that always the right call? I don't know. The window conversation makes me raise my eyebrows a little bit to it, because this is in direct opposition to that.
And the
thing, they know things. They were involved in conversations that you and I were not involved in, so I understand that. And maybe they just legitimately got to the point where there was no resolution whatsoever, and they didn't see it. But the Deebo Samuel thing, depending on how this plays out, is going to be interesting to monitor. Maybe the Titans just kind of pulled the trigger a little too early on A.J. Brown.
Yeah, I mean, you're pulling the trigger there to get something back. But that's the thing. It's like, even not knowing every bit of discussion, I do know that there was more time. I mean, I definitely know that there was more time, that it didn't have to happen then, and that cooler heads often prevail in these situations. And they really do. Again, it depends on who you're dealing with. And the agent is one thing. And obviously, this agent is aggressive. But, again, I'll go back to
– the same age as Deebo Samuel, by the way.
Right, exactly. Which now – yeah, which at the time looked like one way. And, you know, again, like you said, the fines are heavy, you know, for missing things. So you have to keep that in mind here too. But I'll bet that Deebo Samuel is a really good player for the Niners this year and that they figure it out. And that's what could have happened here. Didn't happen, like you said. For John Robinson, he will not be like looking at like A.J. Brown Twitter highlights probably next year. You know, like, what's the point? And the thing is, like, let's say Treylon Burks just has an okay rookie year. He's not great. He's not close to what A.J. Brown is. That's the most likely. I mean, it's very unlikely that he's going to come close to replacing what A.J. Brown did for this offense. But he plays. You can see where he could be good. He's improving. And they're really good. Then it's okay. You know, then okay, because you found – oh, your offensive line choices were good, and your offensive line's good. Caleb Farley, wow, that ended up being a good pick. He's a starting cornerback and really good. This team wins the division. Then the direct A.J. Brown loss is way less of a problem, right? I mean, there's a lot of different – again, it's just like John Robinson last year. Julio Jones doesn't work out. Clowney didn't work out. Beasley's had, you know, Isaiah, he's had a lot of misses. But also, you found like some dudes off the street who helped you play winning football, and you were the number one seed. So as the GM, you put together a team that performed. However that comes about, if it keeps happening, then it's not going to be that big of a deal. It's just harder for me to see it coming about without A.J. Brown.
What would Treylon Burks – outside of like just the win-loss total of the team, because that's ultimately what's most important, Treylon Burks, what do you need to see from him as the year goes on to make you feel great that he can come in and maybe not even this year, but one day adequately replace A.J. Brown?
Well, I think the thing with him, and this I go back to way before the draft when our Derek Mason was talking about this, and obviously no one here knows anything close to as much as Derek Mason about NFL receivers, having been a great one. And he said the big difference he saw was the feet. You know, A.J. Brown has really quick feet. A.J. Brown may not be a pure 4.3 guy, but he has good speed, and I think better speed too, but quicker feet, getting out of his breaks. TD talked about that last week. You know, that's just like on the, from the technical side of things, is he explosive and sudden enough? You know, then you get into, is he in shape?
Well,
I mean, you gotta
that's going to have to be part of the equation.
Yeah, you know, but look, I will say, if you want to go watch just a cut-ups of Arkansas last year, you see why he went where he went. I mean, he's got size, speed, power, tough to bring down. Who was it on our show yesterday talking about his catch radius? I love that term. I love catch radius. Such a great, like...
It's Corey Curtis.
Yeah, yeah. The Ask Corey... Of course it was Corey Curtis with catch radius. I love that. Yeah, it's one of those, like, draft Nick turns it now, just a mainstream term. But he does. He goes up and he just gobbles up the ball. I mean, I could see him being a better red zone, you know, threat, like a little bit more of a just throw the fade up guy in the red zone than A.J. But you're just going to have to see consistent excellence from him. And obviously you hope durability. I mean, that is the knock on A.J., and it's a fair one.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll get into some storylines heading into minicamp coming up next as well. Attention men, have you been struggling with erectile dysfunction? Well, Hillside Medical Clinic has a breakthrough treatment for ED that does not require any pills, injections, or surgery. And right now, Andrew joins me from Hillside Medical Clinic to tell us all about it. Andrew, what's going on?
Well, that's right, guys. If you're struggling with ED, you're probably sick of those pills. I don't blame you. Hillside Medical Clinic uses the most advanced form of a technology. It's called wave therapy. Gentle pressure waves go through the skin into the blood vessels. It only requires a few 10-minute treatments, and it's clinically proven to get rid of the erectile dysfunction without the use of pills.
So, Andrew, what kinds of studies have been done on this wave therapy technology?
Well, it is extensive. 60 clinical studies. Think of that, from 5 countries all over the world. This is heavily vetted. Even Cambridge University studied this, and it was called the new standard of care for erectile dysfunction.
And Andrew, you've got a special offer if our listeners call in right now.
We certainly do. Guys, if you're ready to end the ED and regain your love life, grab your phone, give us a call. The assessment, exam, and blood flow ultrasound is going to be free this morning. And this very popular gift that produces immediate results in the bedroom, you'll love that. It's worth hundreds of dollars. Call us now. It's all no charge.
You heard it, guys. You can put a stop to your erectile dysfunction by treating the root cause of the problem. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now to qualify for that offer at 615-576-5000. That's 615-576-5000. Put a stop to your ED and regain your love life. Call Hillside Medical Clinic right now at 615-576-5000. 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and 102.9 The Buzz, and the Nashville Predators will host a 615-day celebration coming up at Fordyce Center in Antioch on Wednesday, June 15th, and will benefit Boys and Girls Clubs of Middle Tennessee. This event will feature fun for the whole family while paying tribute to Nashville's annual 615-day, an occasion that pairs Music City's area code with the date of June 15th. For more details and to bid on silent auction items, you can visit thegamenashville.com/615-day. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. We'll be joined by Emily Proud from News 2 coming up at 9 o'clock. We had her thoughts on the Titans, some assistant coaches about to speak. So looking forward to that coming up from Emily at 9 o'clock. Adam Vinkin at 9:30 as well.
Conveniently kept those assistant coaches from talking to me. I see what you're doing, Titans.
Nick Westbrook-Akina and Nicholas Petit-Frere said, at all costs.
Yeah.
Keep the assistant coaches away from Joe Rexroad.
NWI is like, can I talk around like 7, 8 a.m.? My immediate availabilities? Anytime before 10 a.m.?
I will show up very early to make sure that this is done before 10 o'clock. Good stuff. We are almost there to minicamp here with the Tennessee Titans. OTAs, I guess the last media viewing period of OTAs is today, and then minicamp right around the corner. What are the top storylines with the Titans right now that have drawn the most interest from Joe Rexroad?
Well, this is another example of me not being creative enough, but, I mean, Treylon Burks is the first thing I think of. Treylon Burks last week talked for the first time since it all began, so we went backward with him and talked about what was going on, and he didn't answer. But, again, that sort of overshadowed the fact that things are getting better, apparently better, more participation and making some plays. So does that continue? If it's just, again, I'm basically bought in. It was just guy out of shape. He just randomly has an inhaler lying around. But, you know, trying to get in better shape. Is that happening? Is that all this is? Is he progressing? Certainly the offensive line is, even though it's not prime offensive line time in terms of evaluation, it's still really interesting to me who's playing where and how do they look moving around, things like that. Again, it's – I mean, Dylan Radins, if you're going to be the right tackle for this team, you got to be a physical run blocker. So those are things that you're not going to know, that you're going to have to find out more in camp. But still, where is he playing? Is he more at right tackle? And, you know, some of these things we aren't supposed to say. Well, we have Beauclair on to tell us where everybody was playing. Beauclair's above the law, man. DBs, another thing to watch for me, certainly. How's McCreary come along? Theo Jackson still progressing. I thought Theo Jackson, TD talked about this, and yeah, he got torched pretty good by Austin Hooper on a particular play, where he just gave up the outside leverage, and, you know, Hooper looks good. I mean, Hooper is, he's probably been
a that's a consistent theme of Austin Hooper looking pretty good.
Yeah, like the first day, I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So that's what a big, fast number one tight end looks like. They didn't have one last year. So not saying, like, if you want to talk about whoa factor, there's a lot more with, say, a Jonnu Smith in games and in practices. But Austin Hooper, he fits the bill. So, again, don't know exactly what all went down. There's a lot of things going on with Cleveland. Still a lot of things going on with Cleveland. It's going well up there.
Yeah, really nicely.
For the Browns. Really looking good right now, that guaranteed deal. But mm-hmm. But I think Austin Hooper is going to be a key part of this offense.
Let's go to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Heidi from Dixon texting in says, I predict 2 years of Woods replacing AJ's production and 2 years of Burks replacing Julio and Davis's production, and then they swap roles finally. So a little bit of a slow build from Treylon Burks, according to Heidi from Dixon.
Okay. Well, there's a big difference between Julio and Davis production, first of all.
There is.
Julio production last year and Davis is last year. But see, so production is ultimately what matters, right? But the one thing that neither of them, well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know with Treylon Burks. I mean, he could be a superstar. Like, I don't know that he won't be, but I think the thing that you really worry about replacing with A.J. Brown isn't just production, but it's also what you do to a defense. A.J. Brown affected a defense, manipulated a defense, because he was that level of weapon. So are either of these guys, I'm comfortable in saying Robert Woods is a really good player, and it's a really nice pickup. I like it a lot. Things look good with the ACL. I don't think Robert Woods has ever really scared anybody. He's a good player. He's going to produce. A.J. Brown scares people.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It's more intangible than tangible. But, I mean, if you watch the Titans the last few years, it meant something. He got extra attention plenty because of that. When they were also trying to deal with how do they tackle Derrick Henry, you know, so – well, that's my question, is who scares the defense on the outside?
Well, that's the theme. Like, we talked about yesterday, the speed threat at wide receiver is not really there. Like, that's why I think the idea of Will Fuller is so intriguing to Titans fans, because he does have speed. Now, you know, at some point he's probably going to get hurt and he's not going to be available for you, but he does have the speed threat. I will say, like, the Titans' plan in terms of the players that they like to go after, to me at this point on the offensive side of the ball, is pretty clear. Like, they want to be very difficult to tackle. Derrick Henry's very difficult to tackle. A.J. Brown was very difficult to tackle. Jonnu Smith. You can put Austin Hooper in that category.
Mason Kinsey,
very difficult to tackle. You can't catch up to that guy. But, like, Treylon Burks, watching him in college.
That was a joke, everybody.
It's hard to bring that guy down.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. I mean, well, when they had it, so end of 19, that's when it really kind of became a thing. You know, that was Brown's rookie season, and he was really starting to come along. And Jonnu Smith was really starting to come along in 19, which was his third season, and obviously Derrick Henry. So once that offense flipped that year, I remember that's the first time I thought, like, who has three guys who are more of a problem to tackle than those three? Brown, Smith, Henry. Now only one of them remains, but Burks, same idea. I mean, Hooper is – I mean, yeah, that's what you want, a tight end. I mean, you got to have somebody who can be – you know, can win at the point of attack and be an inline block, all that stuff. So that's more – I mean, Jonnu was more like when he got going with the speed. Oh my gosh!
He get ahead of steam. It was scary.
Yeah, but I agree. That's clearly a thing that they believe in. It makes sense, physicality. But I just, it's like if you can, with AJ, you had the speed factor enough to really be a problem. I still think back to, I mean, they don't beat the 49ers if he doesn't dominate that game, and then the outcome of last season is different. Not that it worked out in the playoffs, but they don't get the one seed. I still feel like there's a speed. It's like, look, they're still getting Kyle Phillips, right? They still do have. I mean, I joked about Mason Kinsey, but they've had Cam Batson and Chester Rogers. Like, you know, you still have different kinds of players in your offense. The one different kind they don't have, to me, is just the guy who can run past everybody.
Well, and I'm interested. You know, we went into last season talking about the defenses. Like, how are they going to defend this Titans offense with A.J. and Julio and everything they have? Like, to me, it's pretty clear. Like, when Derrick Henry is back and he's the running back there, I mean, there are going to be a lot of eight-man boxes. There are going to be a lot of people in the box with Derrick Henry. And if you're the Titans and if you're Todd Downing, you got to be able to make them pay for that. And you need your wide receivers and your tight ends to be able to win and get open in the passing game. So I'm sure we'll see whether or not they can do that, but – to me, we talk so much about Derrick Henry having a bounce-back year, and we'll see whether or not he can do that. Team's going to be focusing in on Derrick Henry from the start. I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah. No, it's, and you just got to have that balance. You got to have balance, and you got to have enough guys on the outside who, you know, can win, you know, win against press coverage and just, you know, make plays on a consistent basis. Sean Mack from Dixon says, guys, it's not much to replace Julio's production. Heck, Heidi from Dixon could replace him, that's fine. That's a fine joke, Sean. But my question here is, do you know Heidi?
Both from Dixon.
Or is this Heidi? I mean, this could be so many things. If you know Heidi and have actually spotted Heidi in person, please, please respond. Please let us know. And Corey texted me, said he also has excellent verticality, superior ability to high point the football.
Oh, yeah.
Outstanding. Yes. Those are excellent draft nerd terms, Corey.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get back into a discussion we had earlier about Dylan Raidens and Caleb Farley. Who is more likely to have a bigger impact on the Titans this season? We'll get to that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Catch the NBA Finals on 102.5, 106.3. The game as the Boston Celtics host the Golden State Warriors coming up in Game 3. Tip off at 8 o'clock tomorrow night in Game 3. The NBA Finals coverage powered by FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. You're on ESPN 102.5, 106.3. The game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have Emily Proud coming up at 9 o'clock, Adam Vingan at 9:30 as well. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Dennis texting in says, but how is his, quote, edge work, talking about Treylon Burks?
Ooh.
We could really get all the draft buzzwords out of the way. We really could.
I think once we get into July, we need to do a draft buzzwords Mount Rushmore. I think that'd be awesome.
I think high pointing the football maybe at the top of that.
High pointing is pretty good.
I love that one.
Yeah.
Catch radius is good, though.
Well, I think high pointing is a little bit older. Like it's been around a little bit longer. The catch radius is one of those really newfangled, fancy ones. Riderly a little bit there.
Always love the high point too, because like on the fade route, if you actually were high pointing the football, you would get it like halfway after his release point. You know, but there is that.
Like Davis Mills could probably go do that.
Davis Mills.
With his mouth.
Yes, he could definitely high point
with his mouth.
So we had this discussion earlier on a riveting buy or sell that you put together with Caleb Farley and Dylan Radins. I ask you this. Which do you think has the better chance to be a more productive player for the Titans this year? When you factor in everything, the injury concerns with Caleb Farley, the positional concerns with Dylan Radins, everything involved with it, who do you think has the better opportunity to be a productive member of the Titans this season? Caleb Farley or Dylan Radins?
Yeah, see, that's another good kind of spin on the whole situation. We were talking earlier about would they get double-digit starts.
Yeah.
I think Dylan Radins, there's no restriction on him. The difference there, of course, is Dylan Radins just may not be good enough and Caleb Farley may not be healthy enough.
Exactly, yeah.
Who has a better chance? Well, they're both, I think, competing with draftees. At least, there may be others in there. But I would say for Caleb Farley, although I think Buster Skrin is a good veteran to have around, you know, I think it's probably going to be Farley or McCreary. And Farley should have an edge there. I mean, just being in the NFL for a year, even though he was hurt most of his rookie year. And I do think that Farley has the tools to be a really good corner in the NFL. We'll see if we ever get to see them put to use and if it actually comes together for him. But I think he has the talent level. Radins, I don't know if he does. I'm just talking through this without answering because I would say if you had to say who has a better opportunity. Well, I think I feel more confident in Farley than Radins.
Is this just
some of this is like the unknown? They're both unknown to an extent.
Yeah, I think I would probably lean Farley. I mean, the problem, the more concerning part, like Farley to me, my concerns with him are two things: they're injury based, and they're does he have enough experience playing cornerback to come in and be effective at the NFL level this early? You know. It doesn't really have anything to do with his physical ability. Like, I think what he can do physically is pretty clear, and we saw that in college at Virginia Tech. Like, athletically, he's certainly an NFL player and certainly capable of being a good NFL cornerback. I just have concerns about his injuries, and I have concerns about has he played the position enough to be a really good cornerback at the NFL level? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. My concerns with Dylan Radins are, I just don't know if he's good enough. And to me, I understand it's neither situation is ideal, but me personally, and I know some people disagree, I would rather have the guy where I feel good about the talent and less good about the injuries than I would. I feel okay about his availability, but I have no clue if he's any good or not. Like I'll take my chances with Caleb Farley there and just hope that he can stay healthy. Yeah. So I will give the slight edge to Caleb Farley. Although I will say, like, it's difficult for me to believe that he's going to get through an entire season healthy just based on his recent injury track record. It's very difficult for me to believe that.
Yeah. I mean, look, some guys just can't hold up in this game. I mean, it's just how, so sometimes if you just took the back injury alone, obviously that scared a lot of teams off, understandably so, I think, because back injuries are just different. Like someone said during the draft process last year, like no one ever says, yeah, I used to have a back thing, like you have a back thing, it's hard to not have a back thing. But then on top of that, you got multiple ACLs and stuff like that too. I mean, some guys just like it, just some people can go through this stuff, like Bruce Matthews can play 20 plus years in a time when it's full smash into each other in practice and camp and all that, and you're just fine. Good. Well, I'm good.
We talked about Harold Landry earlier. I mean, he's kind of the perfect example. Not only has he been available for basically every game, in a lot of situations, he's played almost every snap. I mean, it's some guys can handle it, some guys can't. And I'm not saying, you know, for sure that Caleb Farley can't. I just
– the history –
it's difficult for me to feel good about that right now.
Yeah, the history gives you – doubt, as it should. So, and but with the Raiden, but I'm with you. I'd still rather have a high level talent, and I do think he is that, than who has that concern. I'd still would take that over someone you're just like, oh man, this guy just may not be good enough. And it's still early to say that for sure about Dylan Raiden's. I mean, again, I think camp is going to be, you know, like even just like the week against the Bucks, you know, that's always probably the most illuminating training camp week for a team is when they play it, especially like a good team on the other side. Got some good D linemen. Like there's a week where even if we aren't sure by then anyway, they will have played one preseason game. So we'll have a pretty good idea. But that week will be like, okay, last camp, it didn't look good for him, but he was a rookie and all the time off and everything. Now, this is just an offseason that needed to be huge for him, but then what is the actual ceiling? I don't know.
Well, and I think some of this conversation that we're having with Dylan Raiden's is, you know, they've been so hesitant to talk about where he's going to play and where they see him playing. I think it tells a lot of people, and really tells myself included, that they just don't know if he's very good. I mean, and that may not be the case. Like maybe they're thinking right now, Dylan Raiden's is going to be our right tackle, and we feel pretty good about it heading into the year. They might feel that way, but the way that they've handled it kind of signals to me that, I don't know if they're all that sure about Dylan Raiden's at this point.
Yeah.
And we could be totally off there, but that's the way I read it.
It's hard not to read it that way. Indy Ben says, once McCurry and Petit Frere were drafted, it basically told me they're not confident in either Farley or Raiden's. And you may be right.
Could be.
You may be right, you know, but if you're a team that truly goes by your board, then both of those picks could fall into that category. Don't forget that when you're drafting a tackle right now, you are also, as a GM, you're thinking about Taylor Lewan. You know that the clock's ticking there. I don't know how soon it's going to hit the alarm bell, but the clock is ticking. So you need to continue to add tackles. And I mean, right now, your backup corners are a pretty aging journeyman and, you know, a seventh-round pick from a couple years ago. So you need depth there, too. But I'm not saying you're wrong, Indy Ben. Just saying we don't know that for sure.
We don't know it for sure, but I did think about that. Like, when they drafted a corner and a tackle with your second and third-round picks, I was like, I've been down this road before.
They have drafted other high corners and tackles. I shouldn't say other high corners and tackles. I should say other corners and tackles high in the draft.
Well, okay, so what do you think the chances are that McCreary is ready to start ahead of Farley immediately? Like, you know, I don't really hear anybody talking about that, and maybe that's not the plan. But is there a chance in your mind that McCreary is the one that's ready to go right now, and maybe Farley isn't come training camp?
Well, McCreary's out there right now getting the full work. That means something. You know, that means something. Maybe we'll know more in minicamp. But, I'm not expecting much from Farley. You're going to be very careful with him. I mean, he tore his ACL during the season, so you're still talking about, like, 9 months ago, right?
Yeah.
8 months ago? 8 months ago? Right around
we
there.
We require a lot of math of you on this show.
Yeah, and I sometimes fail in that regard. But this is opportunity for McCreary. You're getting all those reps, man. You're getting all those reps. And that's what's interesting, too, is because Kaharski on here was speculating that he thought maybe he could be pushing Molden inside. Maybe that's where he's better. But do you feel comfortable if you're the Titans just having Fulton, you know, Farley, and then like screen as your outside crew? I don't know. It seems to me like McCreary should get a chance to compete there on the outside.
I would think so as well. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Emily Proud from News 2. We'll get her thoughts on the Titans as minicamp just around the corner from the Two-Tone Blue. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game.